Just as a reminder, last time we spoke, which was I think 2 weeks ago, we spoke about the issue of knives. We spoke about what a knife does. We spoke about what a knife does when you cut with it, like how it transfers. If you use a trade knife, how it transfers case, transfers time, and how we were going to discuss, and also we discussed. Remember, we had this principle of time pugum, which means defiled case. And we learned how... No, that's it.
Is there another set?
No, that's it. You're going to have to share, please. And we learned how... It's very important to remember, when you cut what's called a davar charish, when you cut a sharp item with a knife, so what happens to the tam pagum that's in the knife? Anybody remember? Well, remember, choser v'neor, it reawakens the taste in the knife. So therefore, if I cut, let's say I didn't use normally... I have a fork. My fork is not a good example, but let's say I use my fork accidentally, my fleshic fork on my milchik cheese. Okay, so that's not a knife. That's okay because it's all cold. But if I take my milchik knife, my einu ben yomo milchik knife, and I cut an onion, so what does that onion become?
Milchik,
totally milchik. So people forget that sometimes. It becomes a milchik onion, and that milchik onion now, if you put it in a fleshic soup, what happens to the soup? Makes a tray. It really does make a tray. No, I can't go. This is a review from last week, so you. No. We'll just leave it for now, because I want to get through this so I can get to the Pesach Kashering and answer any questions you had. So if you look on, if you look carefully, I'm sorry. This is a knife that I actually used accidentally for the wrong thing, right? It's a pirate knife usually because it's not marked in our house. And I want to kasher it. So what do I do when I want to kasher something? No, I stick it on top of the refrigerator. You don't do that? This has been on the refrigerator, I think, for probably 6 months. That's the way it is. So tonight I said, oh great, I'm going to be able to kasher it. I'll show you how to kasher it. We're going to go right from here. I already put the pot up, and I'll show you how to do it. It's very simple. Except, remember what we learned last time about a knife? That Chazal felt that a knife needed to be cleaned extremely well. Why? Because there's a shamnunis, there's a certain residue that goes on the knife. Okay? Now, I was going to kasher it, except, take a look at the knife. I rinsed it off the last time. If you look carefully at the knife, you see it? I mean, you can see it right away. Yeah. Now, if you pass along the knife, you'll see that there's exactly what we spoke about, this idea of a shamnunis, of a residue. So I can't kasher it tonight. Why can't I kasher it tonight? I have to clean it first. And leave it for 24 hours, and only then can I kasher the knife. So this is a practically important that. What does it mean when it's clean? You have to make sure that it's 100% clean. You'll see what I mean by the residue when you take a look at the knife.
There's plastic on it.
What?
The fact that there's plastic on the handle.
So first of all, the handle is that plastic? The handle? I think it's wood between you and me. Okay, we're going to talk about what do you do. We're going to talk about this knife specifically also, and we're going to talk about how ramifications. Of pots. Yes.
How can you tell the difference between some kind of residue and just like water spots?
Water spots, you're right. I think you can tell. You'll look at it, you'll see water spots, and you'll also see a little residue. You can feel it. I mean, you can see that there's a streak, a smear on there or something. The way you really tell is rub your hand on it.
Yeah.
If it smears on there, then if there's a residue. If it doesn't smear, see how fine that is? But you can see that you can't kasher it yet. It still has...
Right.
Right.
Okay, so you could wash it. And
then I have to wait 24 hours. Right. Remember, that only time we kasher only what's called tam pugum, defiled taste. You can't use something for 24 hours. Only then can you kasher it. But if you don't do that, then you can't kasher it. Now, today I just wanted to clarify another issue that comes up when it comes to knives that people are aware of, you've heard of. How do you get a knife to be kosher? So everybody's heard. Right, what do you do with it? You stick it in the ground. Where is it from?
Your mother.
Is that really koshering a knife? Does anybody ever do that?
Yeah.
Do you?
Wow, my husband used to make everything free from my house.
Okay.
I guess once upon a time, if you couldn't clean something, you coat it with sand. If you poke it into sand, it
could
act as an abrasive, and I'll be left in there. And so that if you dig it in and out, it's like...
So I want to clarify, putting it in the ground wasn't a way of koshering a knife. It was a way of cleaning a knife. Because remember, our concern was this shamanunis, this residue that was on the top of the knife. So how would you clean it? It's not talking about using it for hot items. If you want to kasher the knife, you kasher it the way you would kasher any other item. But if you wanted to clean it, let's say I have my shleishik knife, and then I used it for cold cheese. So how do I have to kasher that knife? No. Remember, it's only cold. Cold doesn't infuse a transfer of taste per se. So I have to clean it. So nowadays, what would I do nowadays to clean it? Take a Brillo pad and use soap and water. That's exactly what you would do. What do you do way back when they didn't have a Brillo pad and soap and water? So this is what the Gemara says on page 4. It says the Gemara, Hashakin, it's okay, Shavavihi Tahora. If you had a knife, the Mishnah says you can rinse it, you can rub it, and it'll be Tahor. Amarab Ukva Bachama, it said Rab Ukva Bachama, Vinoatza Asara Pa'amin Bakarka. That's called Noatza Ni'itza. Ni'itza means stab it 10 times in the ground. And that's how you would clean it. I'm Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua. Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua said, Ubakarka She'ena Avuda. Meaning, ground that hasn't been plowed. Right, unplowed. See, each one, you have to keep, you keep going 10 other places. I'm Rav Kahana says, Ubisakin yafeh she'ein ba gumot. And we're going to see, this is a very important thing also for Pesach. It's a knife that has no crevices. Okay, why? Meaning, especially if it's serrated, it has crevices. If you ever seen a knife like that, Ni'itza doesn't do anything. Why? Because the shmutz gets in the crevices, and even doing it in the ground won't get it out. And this is a very important move for a Pesach, as we're going to see, that when you want to kasher something, you have to make sure it doesn't have crevices, or we're going to find another way to address the crevices. I'm going to show you an example. So if you see on this knife, okay, this is a two-piece knife. It's got a handle, right? You can see it's got a handle, and then it has a blade. It's two pieces. This has a crevice. How do you clean that? Can't clean it. Right. I mean, actually, if you look carefully, there's schmutz in there. You know? There's only so far your toothpick can go. Okay? Tanya Namihachi, the Gemara says, I just want to be the end of the Gemara because it's very interesting. We also learned, Shaki and Yafeh, Shein Bagumos, Noachash, Arpan Bakarka, a good knife that has no crevices. You dig it into the ground well. 10 times. Amar Rav Huna Breda Rav Yeshua, le'echol ba shonei. That's only to eat cold. But let's say you want to kasher the knife for Pesach. In order to cut your hot meat, you know, you're going to take the meat out and you slice it with it. You have the slicer and you want to, the blade, you take off the blade and you want to kasher the blade. So how do you kasher that? Boil it out. The same way you would boil out. So it's very important that people think that you can kasher a knife by plunging it into the ground. You cannot. You can only clean it that way, which is why no one ever does it anymore. The reason you've never seen anybody do it anymore is because, thank God, we live in the era of Brillo pads and Dawn, which are significantly more effective than plunging it in the ground.
They're going to send for the men's.
You know, by the way, this is when you think about that. So when I was a grown up, so if you wanted to tovel your dishes, the mikvah was like 20 minutes away, and it wasn't a keli mikvah. Now they have keli mikvahs all over the place. We used to go in Sligo Creek Park. You go to the creek, and you're doing the thing. And you always wonder, what do they think of you? And they see you, like, schlepping, you know, some pot down to the creek, you know.
Your boy scout.
Yeah, great.
Well,
a lot of things we do that they send the men to the white coats. Yeah, Viva. What's that?
Separate
set of knives for Pesach. Ah, well, we're going to see that about that in a second. Okay. This is a very interesting story. The Gemara tells a very interesting story in the middle of the Gemara on page 4. Kiha de Mar Yehuda ubati bartuve. Mar Yehuda and Bati bartuve have yasi kame de Shvor Malka. They were sitting in front of the Shvor Malka, in front of the local magistrate. I do the kamau etroga. So they brought out an etrog and they're eating like a lemon, whatever they're eating. Pasak achal. So he cut a piece and he ate it himself, right? This non-Jewish magistrate. Pasak vahavle le'abati bartuvi. Then he cut a piece and gave it to Bati bartuvi. Hadar datza asara zim neva'ara. Then he took that same knife, he put it in the ground 10 times, and then havle le'mar Yehuda. And he gave, and then he cut a piece, and then he cut a piece, and he gave Rabbi Yehuda, Bar Yehuda. So that the magistrate takes out his own knife,
right,
cuts himself a piece of esrog and eats it, cuts another piece, gives it to Baki Bar Tuvei, and then he does the eat. So he knew that Rabbi Yehuda wouldn't eat from his knife.
I see.
So look what happens. And what happens goes, Amalei Bati Bar Tuvei. So Bati Bar Tuvei says, hey, Ba'ahu Gavo Lav Bar Yisrael Hu. But I'm not Jewish either. Right? What do you mean? How come me you gave before you kashered the knife, you made it kosher, and him,
make sure
yeah, you kashered it before. Amalei Mar Kimei Bigavei Umar Lo Kimei Bigavei. He said, well, there's two possible answers. He says, one, I know he's makbid on kashrus. He's a, you know, it's very interesting, by the way, and nowadays it'd be so applicable. But, you know, he's Jewish and I'm not. My friend, I know that man. And if I didn't kosher the knife before I used it, he wouldn't eat. But you don't care. So, you know,
wow.
Right. So I gave to you. You know. Listen to the other answer. Ike de amre. Amarle, itkar mai avidit beurta. He said, I know the Persians had a minug that if you stayed in their house, they, you know, as a guest, so as a favor, they sent you an escort for the night. You know, the nice thing, you know, just like they had the towels, they had the mint, an escort would come. So he says to Bati Bar Tuvei, last night you took your escort, and he didn't. So don't act so fussrumt. <That's it. laughs> Which only goes to show you, right? When they're writing the Gemara, you don't want to have that story told about you. You know what I mean? It's very interesting. Okay. Okay, just let's just go on page 5 for a second. Meat was cut with a dairy knife, and both are cold. The meat, okay, both are cold. Are you accidentally cutting the meat with a dairy knife? The meat, at a minimum, should be scoured and rinsed thoroughly. However, it is preferable to be more stringent and require that one peel away the portion of the meat that came into contact with the knife. Since most knives have a fat residue on the blade, the penetration of the knife causes the meat to absorb the residue. Remember we said you would scrape off, remember the cucumber I showed you last time? You would scrape off that small amount? So that same is true. The knife, according to halacha, the blade should be forced into hard ground. This should be done 10 times, at each in a different place. He has reason to suspect that the pressure of the blade's penetration of the meat caused a residue of fat to adhere to the blade. By forcing the blade into the ground, that residue is removed. The halacha of forcing the blade in the ground in different places is based on the fact that once the blade has penetrated a soft specific spot, that spot becomes soft. Since no pressure was needed to penetrate the ground, the residue will not be removed. Note 1. This halacha applies even if the knife has not been yomo. For as noted earlier, residue that is present on the blade does not become distasteful after 24 hours. This is a 6-month-old knife, right? And you can see that the residue on the blade is still there after 6 months later. Now it has to be washed. I mean, I'm close. I would say I'm pretty close. It's almost, you know, I didn't wash it well. So you have to make sure before you kosher something, especially knives, to wash them really, really well. Note 2. Many authorities maintain that the residue can also be removed by scrubbing the blade with steel wool or hard plastic scouring pad and cold water. This scrubbing, to be halakhically effective, must include use of a detergent. That's what happened. People stopped doing the eat set because what's the point? Instead of getting it all muddy and dirty, I can do it in my sink.
You have to wash it anyway.
Yeah.
Cold water before
you pass it? Yeah, always.
With lots and lots of
soap and cold water. Yeah.
Would you do it? Does it matter if you put it in your Delphic sink or
your Flacious sink? It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Right. Why?
And what about the other knife you had? Does it matter where you got it?
This knife?
Yeah.
It's a Flacious knife, but it doesn't matter because, I'm doing it with cold and doing it with soap. So it wouldn't matter. It's a Flacious knife that I got in Melchip. It's really a trafe knife.
Okay.
So how do you wash something trafe in your kitchen sink?
Wash it in cold.
Wash it in cold, and you're okay. The only thing you have to worry about is there's be'en on it. Let's say if there's real be'en, then you have to really scrape it away in such a way that it won't trafe up your sink. Okay, now we come to kashering the knife itself. Source number 9 from Shulchan Aruch Yore Deya. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Shakin Yashan. Okay, an old knife. Bein gadol, bein katan. Whether it's big or small. Hanikach me'ovi kochav. You bought it from a non-Jew. You bought an old knife from a non-Jew. Right? Why would they do that? Nowadays, we would never imagine doing such a thing. Right? You buy it anywhere, right? It was cheaper. Who bought new things? Who could afford new things? It's interesting when you learn the halacha, you see, a sort of facts about what life was like. You know, the halacha had to deal with all these things. If you bought an old knife from a non-Jew, if you want to use a colt, remember, if there are no crevices in it, no atzar asara pa'amim bekarka kasher. So then you strip it in the ground, in hard ground. Right? So then each digging has to be in hard ground. So therefore you should not stick in the ground where you already did. You can't do it 10 times in the same place, even 2 times. And even then to cut a radish or something sharp, cold, that is sufficient. Okay? But if it has crevices, or you want to cut something hot, or to slaughter with it, milabna, you must do libun, which means you must do, what's libun?
Burn it out.
Or you have to sharpen it with a sharpener well throughout the entire knife. Why? Because, again, why would you do libun? What they were afraid of is, how did they use knives? They use knives for everything. So when the non-Jew was using his, grill, so he took the knife and stuck it on the grill, right over that, we were afraid that the non-Jew used the knife with fire itself. And we're going to learn in a second that how you kasher something, the only way you kasher something is the same way that it was used. So therefore, the halacha is that in order to kasher a knife, you have to do libun, at least according to the Shulchan Aruch. Now what if you didn't use it, you only used it, let's say, normally you didn't use it on the fire. I can tell you for sure, this knife that I'm going to kasher wasn't used on the fire. Right? I used it to cut the wrong thing. It's probably warm, something warm, I guess. So in that case, the halacha is, well, you have to do hagala. We're going to see. We're going to have to boil it. Yeah.
This
first knife, the one that you bought, means that if you just put 10 times in half earth and you got it from the non-Jew and you don't have no idea what they used it for, right, and something cold, it's okay?
Uh-huh.
So we still pass the knife? Sure do. That's the halacha, because you're only using
a cold.
Since it's only cold, then we're not afraid of any residue that was left on the knife.
Would that be the same thing now as washing it in cold water
and
scrubbing it?
Sure. And no, you would never do that, right? I
didn't. Are you saying that?
What can I tell?
A good knife and a steel kasher.
You know, you could. Let's say you want to go buy Costco, Cutco knives.
Expensive
knives. You could go on eBay and buy used Cutco knives on one condition. We're going to see in a second. The condition being either it has to be so fine, as I would say, even examine a knife like this, where the handle is forged in such a way that there really aren't crevices here. Right? If you look at the handle, you'll see that there are really no crevices. Whereas if you look at it, there are many knives where the handle is riveted on in such a way where there are crevices, and those are nearly impossible to clean. Miriam, do we have any in the kitchen over here?
Okay, I'll take a look.
Take a look and see what we have.
The thing is the tang, that's the part that's in the handle.
Yeah.
If you look at it, you'll see that the tang goes all the way through. You see the metal part?
Yes.
It goes all the way to the end of the handle.
Right.
Because there are a lot of knives, the lesser quality knives, it doesn't go all the way through.
Right.
And those become a huge problem because things can get caught in between that.
Tell you, by the way, just as a rule of thumb, these are very good knives that we discovered. Like, you know, when you first get married, they give you the Farberware cheapo knives. So finally we invested 1 year in good knives. Oh, that's all the difference in the world. You know, so... just a recommendation. Buy good knives. But that's not a kosher thing. Turn to the OU book, please. Page 16. So we'll go over this. Mm-hmm. Page 16. So we'll go through each item. We'll go through. Yeah, there is more. I got another one here. And there's also more in the office. There's more in the office.
Oh,
I think it's open. I think it might be open. Okay. So we'll read through it together, and this way, if you have any questions, I'll be able to answer any questions you might have. It's interesting. I was commenting to somebody the other day. It used to be that the rabbi would have to give me the shiur, and nobody would know. And nowadays, people find most of their stuff they find on the internet. They answer a lot of their questions.
This one is plastic, and you can see.
Yeah, okay, this is perfect. If you could see a lesser quality knife, first of all, it's dirty. Second of all, you'll notice in here, you'll notice in this indentation as you pass it around, that there's a hole in here. Plus, if you look carefully, you'll notice that since it's not made properly, or not made perfectly, the dirt can get in the holes and it's impossible to clean. Impossible. So what they would do back when was, since the knives nobody would ever make an item this cheap. Because you couldn't make it with, there was no like plastic like that. And they wouldn't, so what they would do is have removable handles. It wouldn't be a rivet. What it would be is a screw and then another screw on the other side. So what you would have to do in order to kasher this is
take it apart.
So many people, if they want to kasher pots, there used to be a time when I first started up that people would kasher pots. And now, you go to Bed Bath & Beyond, you go to Target, you go to Meijer, you buy a cheap pot, it's not worth it to start kashering pots. They kasher? Yeah.
There's a lack of space.
Right, it's clearly a function of wealth. It's so interesting, by the way. This is Americans. My brother was telling me, and he lives in Kiryat Sefer, he doesn't have much stuff. Israelis, especially Haredi Israelis, they don't have anything. They have a couple of pots, and what else do you need? They don't have a pot for this, and a pot for this, and a pot for that. So when Pesach comes along, you kasher. And there's nothing wrong with it. What? Yeah? Okay.
What about that other knife, that plastic handle?
This one? That's a good question. This also, first of all, I wouldn't kasher this, only because, well, maybe I would. It looks like you can clean it properly. So you have to do hagala. And it doesn't look like there are any, you have to examine it. It doesn't look like there are any crevices in here. It looks like it was made well enough. Again, I think it's an issue of being able to examine it. Now, what about the plastic?
That's the problem.
Right, that's the question. Can you kasher this knife not because of the crevices, because of the plastic? What do you think?
You said plastic would be kind.
We will see. Not only I said, we shall see.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yes.
The sharpening, is that for someone to shave off?
Yes, the sharpening, even a small amount, would shave off whatever that really you're worried about the residue specifically and the outer edge that might have any toughness in it. But you have to do it carefully. I've never seen anybody sharpen a knife that well. You have to go to a professional knife sharpener and ask them to sharpen the entire thing. I would just say to purge it, to clean it. One of the many preparations one must make for Pesach is kashering, a process to prepare chametz vessels for Pesach use. Although most people only kasher their utensils in preparation for Pesach, the following directions apply to kashering utensils all year round as well. As with all areas of halacha, those who are unsure how to apply the rules of kashering to their situation should consult their local Orthodox rabbi. Always good advice, I would say. I'm going to take you right now. This should say, I'm sure most of you have seen stuff being kashered. But it's just worthwhile to see how to do it, because there's a big difference between reading about it in a book and actually doing it. General rules. Yeah. There are two steps in kashering. Cleaning. One, removing all tangible traces of chametz. And two, purging. Using heat to remove all absorbed chametz flavor. Cleaning. All chametz utensils that will be used for Pesach must thoroughly be cleaned. This involves removal of all food, rust, dirt, calcium deposits, and anything else that protrudes. It does not include the removal of discoloration. So now you ask me about those water spots. Now if you look at the knife, right, there's going to be little spots that just don't come out. It's been discolored. That's different than sometimes you'll have pots that have black on them. Right? If you sat there and scrubbed and scrubbed and scrubbed and scrubbed, it would come off. So that you have to take off. But a discoloration, a spot, you don't have to take off. So any kind of protrusion, any kind of dirt has to come off. Okay? Items which have narrow cracks, crevices, deep scratches, or other areas that cannot easily be cleaned cannot be kashered for Pesach. Therefore, the following, for example, cannot be kashered. And this is just a partial list. Colanders, decanters or baby bottles due to their narrow necks, filters and screens over drains in sinks, right? So for Pesach, you should have a separate set, right? Because remember, those become chametz. They become belchik or fleishik. So even though it's not a problem, for Shabbos or what have you have to have a second set. Okay? Graters, Knives where food or dirt can get trapped between the blade and handle. Slotted spoons. Sponges. I don't know how you would clean a sponge anyway. And toothbrushes.
Microwave and the dishwasher.
Well, don't get ahead of yourself. We're gonna see in a second.
Okay. This afternoon, I
take about 10 minutes
with toothbrush.
So normally, what happens is when people come on Erev Pesach to kasher the pots, I will usually they'll come, and the first thing I'll do is say, take off the handles. You have to take off the handles. If you've ever taken the handles off of your pot, what's under them? It's black, because you don't realize how the dirt gets in there, so you can't kosher it unless you're able to take off the handles. Now, what happens if the handles are riveted on? So what we will do is, in better pots, you can blowtorch it. You can burn it out in such a way where it's not a problem. And so it's always good to have a plumber's torch handy.
Right?
I used to have one. I bought one. It cost me $15. You could buy it at your local. Once somebody asked me to kosher their pie, I didn't have the thing, and she had like a little creme brulee. Right, so that's what we use because it's a little blue flame. There it is, no problem. Okay, purging. In addition to cleaning, most items require some form of hot purging in order to remove the flavor that has been absorbed. As a rule, any utensil that came in contact with hot food was washed with hot water or was used to store liquids requires hot purging. A comprehensive analysis regarding when hot purging is required and how one determines which form of purging is effective is beyond the scope of this article. Yes, it is. If anybody has any questions about specific things, now would be the time to ask. Okay, when you think of it, I mean, that's really what everybody can
say. So, yes. You had a cold night. And you've done that, you've cleaned it, you scoured it, you've only used it for cold.
Right.
Once it has become...
If I know for a fact, by the way, I've only used it for cold.
Right.
For a fact?
Right.
Then you don't even have to kosher it.
But can you then, after you
Even if I use it for davar charif, no, I don't have to kosher it. Remember, the problem is, we are afraid that there was some newness, and that's what brought out
the...
Even if you use it for davar charif. Oh, I know what you're saying. If you use it, then even a tam balua inside for davar charif. Yeah, you're right. So you'd have to kosher it if you want to use it for onion.
So you've stabbed it 10 times.
Right.
You've washed it. You're now using it cold. Can you then, once it's acceptable for cold, can you then use it for hot, or do you have to...
No.
So that knife would then still have to be further kosher.
Absolutely would have to be further kosher. And you're right. Except if you use it for davar charif for a sharp item, because then even if it's the chametz it's tam in it, then you'd have to remove it. Yes.
Cold roast beef, got lots of fat going through it,
mm-hmm.
But you're cutting cold,
right.
So that's still okay.
With that knife?
Yeah.
Yes, cold, right, something cold, but, right, you wouldn't do it, nobody would do it nowadays, yes. Right, yeah. Nobody would do it nowadays. But you're talking about lechachil, we talk about halacha lechachila and b'diyevet. So what's a b'diyevet situation where you say, no, not a chance, but you do it all the time? Have you ever gone to, let's say, Westbourne and bought a quarter of a watermelon?
No.
Never?
No, yes, I do.
Yeah, sure, we do it all the time. Right? Why?
Because
right, that's exactly the point. And you don't have to assume that they just cut their
roast beef
with it and that there's, they have an incentive not to get roast beef to wash it well. And in addition, it's all cold, but we do this all the time. So you wouldn't do it in your house, but we bring plenty of items into our homes which have been cut in that way. It's a very interesting thing. In Europe, you don't do it?
No.
You only buy whole?
No, not because the knives.
We used to buy it all the time. The other area where this becomes an issue is, of course, buying fish from a fish store. That becomes a very, very big issue because there are ways to buy it. Let's say you're caught in, Oshkosh, Oklahoma. I assume there was an Oshkosh, Oklahoma. Right? You want to get ready for Shabbos. There's no, the one thing you can really buy is kosher fish. That's a piece of salmon. You can identify it as a salmon. But there's no knife. So you have to ask them to really thoroughly wash the knife in such a way where you're sure that there's no sham newness on it. And the more careful you can be, the better it is. And if not, even if they use a non-kosher knife, remember that all you have to do is scrape the area where they cut, and then it'll be kosher. It's cold. It's all right. As opposed to, so even though you wouldn't bring it into your house, in the kosher kitchen it comes up quite a bit, this area of knives. Okay, so the general rule that we apply is kabolo kach polter. The way you use it is the way you have to purge it. So there are different types of purging. The first purging is what we would call is hagala. Does he go through each one? No, he doesn't. I will explain. First purging is called Hagala. Hagala means boiling out. So anything that was used with hot water requires boiling out. So what happens if you know something was never used at all with hot water?
Then you don't have to do it.
You have to rinse it. The Gemara, the Shulchan Aruch talks about, let's say, glasses. They never wash their glasses with anything other than something cold. They would rinse it out. Why? Who would waste heat or fuel to warm water in order to wash a dish, in order to wash a glass? It was only cold. So therefore, the Shulchan Aruch says that in their times, they would just rinse out their glasses and use them on Pesach. Why? Because they knew for a fact it was never used for hot. Nobody ever did such a thing. But us.
Before Louis Pasteur.
Yes, that was before Louis Pasteur and a lot of other things.
You never
yes. What?
You never drank a glass of hot tea?
No, but they. I mean, I guess they would. First of all, the
special
tea was powder.
No.
They didn't wash them with their other items. They would drink the tea.
Right.
A little bit. You know? Maybe they would rinse it out cold, but they would never wash it hot.
Well, did they ever soak things out? My mother also used to soak
things. You mean glassware. Right.
Yeah,
yes. Correct. So it's interesting. I spoke about that with someone. So that 72 hours is a well-known thing. But again, because that was because the glass that they would use, right, and most of the glasses, Rove Tashmisham was Bitsonin, was cold. So it's a kula, it's a leniency to use that process, because it's based upon, first of all, the idea that is a machlokes, it's a huge argument whether glass needs to be kashered or can't be kashered. So it was recommended to me that lechatchila nowadays we don't do that for glass. Why? Because again, you can just buy glasses, inexpensive glasses or Pesach. When you go to Target and buy eight for $8, right, so you shouldn't use the kula of exchanging it, soaking it for 72 hours. Yes?
Is today's glass the most common considered glass? Or the Arcorock and also Pyrex?
But you're talking about that, those are Pyrex. Right, but we're not talking about Pyrex glass. We're talking about glasses.
But if we call it glass today, you know when it's really glass.
No, that's glass. I mean, if you have to, first of all, I went to see a rabbi, Moshe David Temner, who claimed that Pyrex is glass. It's for sure glass, you know, and they have to treat it like that. But anyway, so that's level one. Level two is called libun ka. The Gemara tells us that libun ka, libun means, lalabein means to make something from the root of white. Libun is from the word white hot. Okay, so there are two levels of libun. One is called libun kal, and the other is called libun gamor. Libun kal means I heat this to such a degree that if I would take a piece of paper and put it on the side of it, right, the paper would begin to be singed. It says you put straw on it, the straw would begin to be singed. How high do you think that's got to be? Several hundred degrees, right.
400 degrees,
right. You have to heat the thing very hot so that it would, if you put straw on it, the straw would be white hot. That's libun kal. Libun gamor, complete libun, is
red hot.
The whole thing is red hot. Okay. The trick about libun is you can't do it on cheap items. Because what happens when you take your item and you make it red hot?
It'll be destroyed.
Right. The only thing you would ever really do libun gamor on. Let's say I had an iron skillet. Mm-hmm. So if you had a real cast iron skillet, you could put it in your self clean oven, put it on self clean. The thing would get red hot, and what would happen to it?
It would
be fine, right? Then you would do libun gamor. Great, that was kosher for Pesach. But if you took your $10 Farberware pot and put it in your self-clean oven...
Farberware so cheap.
What?
I'd like to know where you buy Farberware so cheap.
I don't know, your $10 off-brand, you know, Meyer, whatever you want to call it, and it'll fall apart. Okay. On sale.
Okay.
Utensils made from the following materials cannot be kosher. One, ceramics, brick, china, coffee mugs, and enamel, glass, so we don't kosher glass, as I said, all forms, including Corningware, Corel, fiberglass, porcelain, enamel, for example, porcelain sinks in an analyzed pot, Pyrex, and thermoses. Okay, plastic. Rabbinical authorities disagree as to whether it's possible to kosher plastic with other synthetic materials. You should consult your local rabbi. If a synthetic material is a minority component of a substance, many rabbis believe that one may kosher it, even if one does not normally kosher artificial materials for a number of reasons. So I just want to tell you, the way it was explained to me, probably the reason why they say plastic is not kosherable is because the distinction the kosher organizations make is between soft plastic and hard plastic. Anything that's soft or pliable plastic, they would not kosher. Anything that's a harder plastic, they would kosher. And they go on the CRC website, when they talk about koshering different types of tops, of countertops, they list all the plastic countertops as being kosherable. They do allow them to kosher them. Now, if you ask me, well, if they're all kosherable, why are we covering all of our countertops?
Because
that's what your mother did.
Seriously?
So says the CRC and the OU, actually.
So if
what do you
get,
have?
What's it called?
Formica? CRC says you could kosher formica.
And how do you do that?
Same way you would kosher anything else.
Or
boiling water in it. Now, they're concerned. The one thing that they're concerned about is, A, if there are scratches in it, right, which can't be cleaned, or B, if there are crevices, especially in the areas in between, the stuff gets in between. So you could cover over those areas, or you could clean them with a costly material. But they feel that you can kosher hard plastics. Right, so I said again, why don't we do it? Because your mother didn't do it. Right? That's why. But I've never seen anybody kosher formica, even though the CRC says, go ahead and do it. Be my guest. Okay.
How is it going to fit into with the newer things like soundstone or granite?
All that stuff is using kosher.
And you don't have to cover it.
Right. No. That's why you buy soundstone or granite. There are synthetic products and materials that look like granite that are not. And you can kosher all that stuff too.
Corian,
all that stuff they feel, and it's but you have to remember, you have to be careful not to have crevices or deep areas where anything can be formed. Okay. What's that? Yeah.
Before we're doing that, does that mean pouring boiling water all over the whole?
Over system? Every area. No, we're going to see that, by the way, with our knife. It doesn't have to be at the same time. You just have to do each specific area. It's a challenge to kosher a countertop. Why? Because you have to be pouring water over every area of the countertop. So you just need a lot of towels. You need a wet, dry vac and a lot of towels. You're going to be pouring a lot of water, but it's certainly doable. Okay, let's... specific items. Silverware, pots, and other small items. Small items involved with kashering with hargala, which involves not using the utensil for anything, including non-chamech, for 24 hours. Why do we leave it for 24 hours? As everyone who's been in this year knows, what happens after 24 hours?
Destroys the taste.
Right. The tam becomes what we call tam pagum, right? Defiled taste. And really, if you'd ask yourself, bidi evet, you called me up and said, Rabbi Spolter, oh my God, I don't know what to do. I just cooked my chicken soup in my chametz pot. I didn't kosher it for Pesach. What should I do?
When did you last use it?
If it's Tom Pagum.
Well, I love that question.
Right? You love that question.
I'm enjoying that question so much.
Right, well, if it's done on Pesach, but if it's Tom Pagum, then it's not really Tom Chametz. Remember, it doesn't have the din of chametz if it's tam pagum, defiled taste.
I thought that
there's
a lot. Yeah.
Well, oh, yes, but then we thought about bitul, about negation, but pagum is not a question of bitul. Pagum is a question of, is it the taste of chametz or is it the taste of not chametz? So the first thing, in order to kasher something, in order to purge it, we first must leave it for 24 hours in order to get rid of the taste. Then two, submerging the utensil in boiling water that is over the fire. The water must be at a rolling boil before the utensil to be koshered is put into it, and the water must touch every surface of the utensil. Therefore, each item should be koshered individually, and the water should be allowed to return to a boil before the next item is placed in the pot. This is very important. I'm going to show you, because you'll see what happens when you take a knife like this, and this knife is
there.
Well, whatever it is. What temperature is this knife?
Right now?
Yes. 70 degrees, right? So that's 70 degrees. When I take a 68-degree knife and I put it in a 210-degree water, what happens to the water?
Temperature goes down.
Immediately goes down, right? So what you'll notice if you start to make koshering, one of the hardest parts is you have to wait, because each thing you pull out, you have to let it come back to a rolling boil, and then you can do the next thing. And I'll show you how to do it. Okay, removing the utensil from the water and rinsing it in cold water. And then the halacha says that it closes the pores, as it were. Ovens.
If I traced up a knife.
Oh, by the way, do you have to do the whole thing at one time?
No.
No, you could do half, and then you could do the other half. Okay, people don't know that. As long as you got over the halfway point, You don't have to go all at one point. People confuse kashering with tobeling. Tobeling and the whole thing has to be at one time. Kashering does not have to be all at one time. Yes?
But can you have to hold, for example, that knife. You're not going to hold it with your hand directly above boiling water and then do the switch.
Right.
You have to hold it with something. Now, what do you hold it with? Do you hold it with a Pesach tongs or a humming tongs that then gets kashered because you put it in?
Normally we have, at least the one we use here, we have a Pesach tongs. Yeah, we use a Pesach tongs. So, but I'm going to show you what the best way to do it.
I'm going to ask about the pot.
I'm going to show you the best way to do it. Preferable to use, it really... It's preferable to use a Pesach pot.
Okay, yeah, so, or if you want your knife, and during the rest of the year, if you want your knife to be flasic, it's preferable.
It really doesn't matter. It really does not matter at all. Doesn't matter at all.
Okay.
Ovens, anybody here not have a self-clean oven? You don't. Okay, if you have a self-clean oven,
self-clean
it. And then you just have to rinse, you have to wipe away. You don't even have to clean out the schmutz that's left. Why? Because the schmutz that's left just becomes charcoal. It's ash. It's nothing. It doesn't have a taste of chametz. Now, if you don't have a self-clean oven, so that's what's called, very important, self-clean is called Liban Gomer. Remember I said there are two levels. Liban Gomer, it gets to 900 degrees or some obscene amount of temperature like that, right? And it really burns everything in it. Non-self-clean gets to only 500, 550. That's what's called Liban Kav. So you have to, in this case, if it's not self-cleaning, then they give you the whole thing. You have to clean it meticulously with an abrasive cleaner in order to defile any taste that might be in the walls of the oven. I have vivid memories of my mother with the easy off and the gloves that go all the way to here. You know?
Yeah.
Oh, man, that was a job. Okay, and this describes, the non-self-cleaning oven. Skip the stovetops, okay? Yes.
Question about the cleaner for a non-self cleaning oven?
Yes.
Have to be an
oil
cleaner?
No. Any cleaner, if you ingest any cleaner, it's going to kill you. Right? Right. So,
obviously it destroys the...
Do not try this at home. Right. Do not eat it. So, it doesn't have to be. In fact, I just saw today Rabbi Schwartz from the CRC Paskin that any detergent you use, even dishwashing detergent, doesn't have to be kosher or kosher to Pesach.
Really?
Yes.
For Pesach?
No, for Pesach.
Oh, it's, for you.
Eat it. Do me a favor. Eat it. See what it tastes like. It's not...
Why not your dishes?
It's soap.
Taking away the taste of something. So that's true year round?
Year round, absolutely year round.
So never needs
Why does dishwashing detergent have an OU? Why does it not have an OU?
Somebody pays.
Correct, because they know that it's deemed. Gee, it was worth coming just for that. I don't believe it. Somebody called me today, this week, and said, Rabbi, what do? I accidentally used spick and span on my dishes. The cleaning lady did it without asking me. What do I do? I said, don't worry, it's okay. It's okay, because it's not a problem. Yes, Mike.
Great for dishes. Like at work, they don't have a dishwashing soap with an OU.
Uh-huh.
And I can use it.
You can use that soap, no problem. What can't you use? You can't use their sponge.
Oh, no, I have a sponge.
Ah, okay. That's very important.
Right.
Why? Because the sponge absorbs the residue of the food. Yeah. Yes. Same thing. Ajax, soft scrub. If the dishes don't need it, the sink don't need it either. Okay. Stovetops. What? Stovetops. So obviously, I always I give my spiel every year. I always recommend when people redo their kitchens. I always recommend I recommend gas stovetops for obvious Bishol-related reasons. Because nowadays, the electric stovetops all have circuitry in them that it's impossible to turn them up and turn them down in such a way where you're not opening and closing a specific circuit. There are certain very specific ones that work in a different way on the thermostat. But most electric, especially the ones with the coils, those are, I think, very questionable, if not impossible, to turn up and down on Yom Tov. Whereas gas is just adding to the flame and lowering the flame. So if you know how to do it in the right way, you can raise it and lower it on Yom Tov, not Shabbos, on Yom Tov. Secondly, with regard to kashering, so the area of the flame itself is not a problem. Why?
Because
it burns itself. It's a flame. But what about the areas under? So obviously you remove the burners, you cover that with foil, you put the burners back. and you're all good to go. You burn out each burner for about not 15, 20 minutes, not more than that, and you're good. Okay, I'm Achmer.
I was doing 30 minutes.
Nah, I remember you used to do an hour, and it was so hot. And you're ready to go. The obvious controversy that comes up each and every year is
glass,
right? So it actually says on the CRC website this year that you should put aluminum foil in between the burners. That's what they said last year. All right, that's not new. Now, did you ever have an instance where you had spillage and it gets under the foil?
Probably.
So what do you do?
I don't know.
Right, so I don't have a resolution for that problem. I don't know. All right, thank God there are bigger postmen than me. I don't, if you have a glass top, please follow the instructions. I just don't recommend it. I really, really don't recommend buying it because it does make things complicated for Pesach. Yes? What?
You said the bottom cover,
right? The actual grates themselves. You don't have to cover them, but I do. I cover them with foil.
Of the gas.
Yeah.
I put them in the...
Oh, excellent. Right, you can certainly do that. Mine, though, right, they don't make cast iron. Mine are earthenware. What are they made out of?
It says it's coated cast iron.
Oh, it's coated cast iron?
Right.
So that I think you would put in the oven. So I usually, by the way, I put foil around mine, but I don't think you have to because it's a flame. Your mom is putting it on the flame, so I don't see how that could be an issue.
It covers the whole cooktop. You could move the pots and you can.
Oh, I would cover it. What I do is I wrap it in foil. That's what I would do. It's a lot of work, but that's what I would do. Sink.
Or by new ones.
But not in the area. She's talking about one where it really covers the entire area, so it wouldn't cost you there. Sink. Stainless steel sink. I assume all of you have done that before.
Yes.
You clean it. You leave it for thoroughly clean. You have to also make sure around the area, specifically around the areas of the
knobs.
But even the area of the spout. Why? Remember we learned about Zaya, steam? Right, how often do you take your noodles, right, and it's steaming up, right, and you pour them in the colander, right, and what happens? The steam is going up. Remember, we learned that the steam itself carries the same property of the chametz, so you have to kosher even the handles, and especially the spout is very, very important for people to be aware of. And there's a lot of residue in all the, if you notice the sinks, they have indented writing, most of them, around the drain pipe or whatever it is, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes,
right. Yeah, I would rather, you have to go over that meticulously, even like you said with who said the toothpick thing? Yeah, you have to be very, very careful about that. Right.
Use a lot of toothpick.
Okay. Then you leave it for 24 hours, as always, boil water up, okay, dry the sink, and then pour the boiling water over every spot on the walls and the floor of the sink and the faucet, etc. Extreme care should be taken during this koshering. None of the boiling water splashes on the person doing the koshering or others who are nearby. That's a very probably good piece of advice in general.
It hurts.
Right, yeah, it hurts. It's very dangerous. You can burn yourself. Yes?
We buy a new plastic, those water directors, you know, the spray at the end?
Yeah.
Because it's plastic.
I don't know. I don't think you have to buy a new one. I think that's a little excessive. You kosher like everything else. It's hard plastic, but I don't think it's necessary. It seems a little excessive to me. I don't buy a new one each year, but I understand if you want to. Okay. Kashering a porcelain sink. You can't.
Can't be done.
Right. It's very hard to cover. I mean, thank God.
Insert.
What?
Use an insert.
Even the inserts.
Heavy duty foil.
Right.
Heavy duty.
The basins, I think the basins, if you use a basin, I don't know. It's very hard to do it sufficiently well. Right, you're not, because in sinks, the food is all over the place, right? And you're afraid that the water is going to splash on the thing and that the food will become attached to it and it will become mixed together. So you have to do exactly what Mike said, put the foil really inside the entire sink, line the entire sink. Right. Thank God. If a person, I would recommend, when people buy new houses and there's porcelain sinks, I always recommend just replace it. It's not worth the hassle. It's just not worth hassle if you can afford it. For people who can't, they have to cover it. Microwave oven. So, by the way, you ever notice how the OU said, when it comes to kashering plastic, ask your rabbi, I'm not really sure you can do it. But now, microwave oven, what does it say? Wait 24 hours, right? Make sure that the microwave is clean. Heat while in the microwave for... What? No, it's pretty much accepted that you can kosher your microwave. People allow koshering microwaves nowadays, okay?
Only 3 days.
Then also pour boiling water over the bottom of the microwave oven. If you can't pour boiling water, then after heating water for 20 minutes, one should move the container to another spot and repeat the heating procedure again. I guess you want to make sure that it goes in all areas. What do you do with a piece of glass? You take it out. You cannot kosher that. We don't kosher that piece of glass. What I usually do is I cut a piece of cardboard, and it works all the same. It's absolutely fine. And we kosher our microwave for use prior to Yantif and also on Chol HaMoed. Refrigerators, freezers, food shelves, and pantries need not be koshered. Right? Again, I always say this every year. The refrigerators need not be lined. Why?
It's cold.
It's cold. Anything that goes into the freezer, by definition, is going to be cold. And you don't have to line your shelves. What do you have to do? You have to clean them. You have to clean it well. Make sure that there's no residue in the refrigerator.
Watch on the shelf, no matter what material it is.
It's all cold. Well, in fact, what they say is not to line them, and even if you're going to line them, you have to cut holes in the lining because it won't circulate the cold air in the refrigerator. Okay, tablecloths, kitchen gloves, aprons, and other items made of fabric. Any fabric item. I don't know. How many people here have Pesach towels? We all do, right? Most people? You don't have to. Yeah, but we don't have to, but we all do anyway. Why? Because you just have to wash them and set it on hot, and and you're okay. All right, are there any questions?
The dishwasher.
Oh, I did? Whoops. Any other questions?
I just want to clarify something. Yeah. I have a new refrigerator, and the door has, in addition, on the shelf, the shelves have a rubber basket. Mm-hmm. Those just have to be washed.
Just rinse it out. Yeah, wash it out. It's fine. But the whole point, by the way, even your freezer, I know people who used to like unscrew the bottom of the freezer because there were crumbs under it. Anything you have to unscrew or disassemble, you need not do for Pesach. Right? You don't have to disassemble anything. You just have to clean it in a way where it's accessible. If you require to, if you find yourself, I don't know, you know,
undoing the bulb and washing.
Yeah. I mean, by the way, I would add in one more thing. Remember I spoke last week, and I mentioned this when we did Zaya steam. I think that it's important to line the area under the stove, under the where the range hood is. I feel that it is, because remember we talked about the steam going up and then dripping down. I think that it's worthwhile to line it with foil so that the before you use that, when you clean your stove, when you cover your stove, you're also covering it from the top down so that when the steam goes up, it doesn't go where the chametz is. If you ever notice, there is a filter in there. Yeah. Take out the filter once, and then you'll never not cover your stove range hood again. I'm going to send it to them. I should recommend the OU to add that in, because I think it's a good piece of advice. Yes?
What about a combination microwave convection oven?
That you can't kosher.
You can't?
No, because it's too small. I think it's way too small. Because remember, it's used in a convection area. It's very hot.
Okay.
I wouldn't kosher. I don't think you could really kosher that, unless you get to self-cloning, which I wouldn't do.
Okay, so then even what we learned earlier with a convection oven, it should be either melchic or flachic because it's not ventilated properly.
Correct. Okay. If it's that small, if it's convection, it's microwave, it's those are sufficiently small that we would probably say that you shouldn't. I wouldn't kosher it. I don't think. I'm not comfortable saying you should kosher it. On the other hand, our regular oven is a convection oven, but it's vented. Is your microwave convection vented?
I doubt it.
I don't think so. It is
hanging from the top.
Hydraulically.
Hydraulically vented.
Very cool.
But we've not used
it yet
as a
that opens up.
Really?
In front of the microwave, it's solid like that.
Interesting.
And you open it, it goes,
so then maybe you could kosher it. I'd have to check specifically. I think that's it. Oh, so let's just do it. We'll stop here. You'll come with me if you're interested to come in the kitchen. I'll say what? Oh, dishwashers. So. Okay. Kosher dishwasher, one should wait 24 hours as usual. Make sure the dishwasher is clean. That's not so easy. Okay, even if it's clean, it's usually not clean. You have to take out the racks and inspect and clean them meticulously, especially the areas where the silverware is kept. Because remember we talked about areas of crevices? I don't know. I mean, you look at it.
You're like, the filter where the.
See, people have said that. I can't find the filter. I asked once. They're not every one of them has a filter like that. Yeah, the older ones have filters. I don't think the newer ones have filters like that.
Screen, actually, and a screen.
Yes, Rabbi.
Screen.
Yeah.
So the guy where you're playing with it, say, this for the game, but Rebbe, I want to know, he says, don't bother me with that question. Besides, I have two dishwashers, one for milk and one for plates.
That's what he said.
Yeah.
So back then, by the issue was, the big shiloh back then, we're going to talk in this class about dishwashers later, can I use it for milk and then for plates? Yeah. That was their issue. But he's not talking about kashering for Pesach.
Yeah, yeah.
So, mechik inflation. Nowadays, most, what are the racks made of? If you look carefully. Hard plastic. Hard plastic. Hard plastic. Yeah. That's why. What?
So it's expensive buying the
bags. Right. So the OU feels that, again, they said you could kosher hard plastic, and therefore they will allow you. He says, okay, it says, where am I? Right. Sorry. I'm spacing out. It evaporated. Oh, here we are. Sorry. Run two cycles. If the dishwasher is plastic, if the washer itself is plastic, there was a debate as to whether one may kosher it, and an Orthodox rabbi should be consulted. Again, it depends. The really cheapy ones, use a very flimsy plastic, I would probably say no, but anything of any quality whatsoever, you probably could kosher it if it was hard plastic. Even if it was plastic, and even the gaskets, and even on the stainless ones, the seals are made of plastic, and the OU feels you're allowed to kosher it. The recommendation I received was, remember we said the principle of kibolo kakach polto, that the heat that was taken in order to absorb the taste, that's the heat that comes out of it. So the recommendation I was given was, You want to run it twice, but first of all, you want to run it on its hottest cycle, right? Because it has super hot cycle. In addition, before you do, go down to the hot water heater and turn up the thermometer a little bit, so that you know for a fact that the water is hotter than it was when you used it, and then make sure to turn it down, so that it's not, you know, so that's your normal. After you're done kashering the dishwasher, you just turn it back down to where it was, and that way you know that you kashered it in a proper way. I have a stainless steel dishwasher. We use it to store all the chametz stick of dishes, because you can fit a lot more chametz stick dishes in it than but if you want to do it, I think you absolutely can kosher your dishwasher. Okay, we'll stop here. Next week we're going to do Pesach products. What you have to cut, what you need, what needs to be kosher Pesach, what doesn't need to be kosher the Pesach. And if you want to come with me, I got a pot boiling, and I'll show you basically how to do Hagola, because my wife wants her knife back.